Here we go, guys. Hold on to your hats. Good evening, gentlemen. We continue in the Rambam Perek Yud Beis Halacha Aleph. We got to start on the next side of the page here. Chapter 12. We again have another opportunity, another Perek a day. We've done 2 days, two Prakim. We're going for three, if not more. All right. Now, Aleph, Ketzad Donim Dine Nefashos. How do we exactly go about these judging these capital cases? Let's go through the details step by step by step. We're talking about judges still now. Let's go from the beginning of the case till the end of the case. That's what chapter 12 is all about. Witnesses come to a court with the following declaration. Ra'inu plonizeh, we saw so-and-so, sha'over avera plonis, that did such-and-such avera, which carries with it a death sentence. Could be anything. Chil Shabbos, murder, whatever. Omrim lahem. So the first thing the judges say is, let's be clear. Makirim atem oso. Are you absolutely sure that this guy, you recognize this guy, you know it's this guy? It's not good enough to know that I saw a guy with a yellow, the man with the yellow hat. So you know who the man with the yellow hat is. And I saw the man with the yellow hat. I saw the yellow hat. I saw Curious George next to him, and he murdered somebody. Well, that ain't good enough. You recognized his hat, but you didn't recognize the man. You got to be clear. You got to recognize. And the truth of the matter is, you also got to recognize the guy they killed also. I mean, you got to recognize a few things over here. Number one. Number two, he's Simbo. Did you give the guy adequate warning?
Right.
Did you explain to him, this is an Avera, you're not allowed to do this? That's the first, before we even listen to testimony. Before we get to first base, we ask him these basic questions. Imam Mar, or Imam Ru, if the witnesses say, Ain onu makirin oso. We don't recognize him. We only know the yellow hat. Only stopping. We're not exactly sure if this is the murderer or the guilty party. Or they say, oh, shalom hisro. We really didn't give him a warning. We saw it, but we didn't warn him. Then right away, hareza potter, the guy's off the hook. We don't even begin the court case because we don't have the kind of testimony to even begin the case.
No foundation.
That's halacha aleph. Now, let's move on to Beis now. Now we say a general rule. Echad Talmud Chacham ve'echad Amor. It doesn't matter if the person who's the criminal is a scholar, knows every aspect of Torah law, or an ignoramus. They both require, before we can punish them and take them to court, Tzorech Asro. They have to be given a due warning before they did the crime that they did. Why? What's the reason of warning? Don't think the reason warning is because the guy didn't know it was wrong. That's not the only reason. It could possibly be a reason because maybe the guy didn't know that...
shouldn't murder.
No, that carrying on Shabbos comes with a death penalty. I only thought working, you know, building something, but carrying's not a creative act. You know, he was absent from school that week when they learned about carrying. So he knows all Shabbos, he doesn't know carrying is. So on the one hand, yes, a Hasra at least makes him aware of the Avera, that's important, but it's a much more important reason. What is that reason? Because lo nitna Hasra elo lahafrim ben shogi lemezid. The warning lets us know if the person did it unintentional or intentional. When a witness say, I want you to know, God says you can't do this. This is an Avera. Now the guy can't say, oh, I didn't know it was us. But I'm going to do it anyway. Now that really tells if it was intentional or unintentional. Because otherwise, Shema Sugar, maybe it was unintentional. So let's see what happens exactly. So how do we give this fellow the warning? Amrim lo, they say the following. That's what they testify in court. They had to do it this way. Prosh, desist. Oh, or they say, al teso, don't do this. Why? Shezo averi, this is a sin. V'chayv alam misas bezdin, and you will be punished with the death penalty. And they don't have to specify which one of the four death penalties it is. You don't have to be that specific. Say, this carries a death penalty. Chilul Shabbos carries a death penalty. They don't have to tell them it's stoning, it's just a death penalty. Or let's say it's not a death penalty on Malchus. Let's say it's lashes. Same thing for lashes. You have to say you can't do the eating tray. Stop eating your pork and beans. Because if you eat the pork and beans, it goes with lashes. Alright? So now, if they tell him to stop, so in Perish, if the guy stops and doesn't do it, obviously Potter. He's Potter. I mean, obviously, because he hasn't done the crime. I don't see the Chiddush over there.
Oh, well, this is maybe
he started doing it.
That's why.
Yeah, maybe he was eating the pork and beans, and they said, you know, that has no hashgacha. What are you talking about? I took it right off the kosher shelf. It said beans. Well, take a look at the can. How did a pork and beans can get over there?
Good.
Oh, thanks. I'm not going to do it. So we can't lash him for eating the last 10 mouthfuls of pork and beans. But he stopped when they told him to stop. So it's okay. Now, you don't even need him to stop. Look how far this goes. And Ashley, he's not going to like this. V'cheinim shasak. What if the guy just was silent and he didn't acknowledge that he heard them? Let's say they said, you know, stop, you can't do this. That guy just keeps doing it. Doesn't go, yes, I hear what you're saying, but I'm doing it anyway. He just continues to do what he's doing. Oh, here kin barosh, or let's say he shakes his head. He doesn't say anything. He says, okay, you know, like I agree. Okay, I'm not supposed to do it. Do you know you're not supposed to? But he didn't say it. Look at this, putter, you're off the hook.
So he keeps doing it.
Yeah, because he didn't acknowledge and say, but I'm doing it anyway.
Could be death.
Okay. In other words, the guy's got a gun. He's about to shoot somebody. And the wind says, stop, stop, don't do this. You're doing murder. You're doing murder, and if you kill him, that comes with a death penalty. So stop doing it. And the guy doesn't acknowledge, and he blows the guy's head off.
Why?
Well, we cannot take them to court. Now, wait a minute. A Bezdin has discretionary powers that they can, you know, maybe not through the formal Sanhedrin court system do it. They've got other things they can make sure to deal with these fellows, okay? But from, they can make sure that he doesn't cause any more trouble. They can make sure he doesn't come out of the mikvah live on Friday.
Oh,
okay.
Well,
yeah, whatever it is. There's ways to do things. So it's like off the record, as
off
they
the
say.
Record.
Off the record.
Off the,
you know? But we would prefer it goes with the legalities. But anyway, putter. Vafilomer, even if he says, Yodea ani, I know. He just says, I know. Even that's putter. Until he says the following. An sheyatras onis, until he releases himself for death. The Yomer, he says, yes, this wording, I'm doing it knowing that this is wrong. And I'm doing it for that purpose. And afterwards, I will get killed. He's saying, I understand that. Okay? That's the point. He is clearly mazed. He is staying. He's unrepentant. And he has the mamish say, and they learn this one word, yumas hames. That the guy is saying, I'm willing to die for it. In other words, he has to be very explicit. I know it's wrong. I'm going to do it anyway. And I know you're giving me a death penalty. Now, when you're doing it like that way, you are clearly articulating total understanding of the situation and total disregard for the law. Anything short of that, he technically is off the hook.
So if a guy
but more than this. He must do it immediately after the warning. Immediately. In the time it takes for 3 seconds to pass. If they say like this, you know, stop it, you can't kill him. Well, I'm going to do it anyway, and I don't care. Off the hook. Off the hook.
No wonder they never had.
Okay. Because once, listen to what Rashi says on this. Because once that much time passes, he may have forgotten.
Yeah.
Because he'd be a little psycho, you know. He's got a lot of things on his mind. Anyway, that's all it takes. So you see, we're not in the, now obviously, you know, we've got to talk about this from a philosophical point of view, but that's clear. Everyone agrees these halachos. It's not the Rambam's Chiddushim. It's straight out of the Gemara and Sanhedrin. All right, but what?
How did we ever execute it?
That's the problem.
70 years.
Well, this is the whole idea. This is the whole idea. There's two points to the halacha. There's the Torah says, if you kill somebody, you're supposed to get killed. What the Torah is really teaching us is, by saying there's a death penalty, they're telling you how wrong it is to do this. The real point when Torah says, if you kill somebody, you're supposed to get killed, not so much that we believe in capital punishment, but more importantly is, every day your little kid goes to cheder, every year he goes to this parsha, from 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, every year he goes over to the parsha, every year it says, you know, killing a person, you're supposed to die, that's a heinous crime. It's unbelievable, nobody could ever do such a thing. The Torah is trying to educate us how to behave. So in the biblical sense, we'd say how terrible the avera is and how punishable it should be. But then when we come to the practicalities of life, we try to do what we can to save a person from having to get the death penalty. Because really, killing is not a deterrent for crime. The deterrent for crime is education. If every week a kid goes to shul, from the very youth, and hears how terrible murder is, he won't kill anybody. And that's the purpose of the Torah saying you get a death penalty. And when people keep saying, they teach us, it's a death penalty, it's a death penalty, it's a death penalty, they know not to do it. If it should ever happen, the Torah tries to exercise compassion to find a way out for the guy. But if it's abused, if the system gets abused, obviously we'll have to take discretionary matters in our hands. But the Torah understands that really it's not such a deterrent. The death penalty is not really a deterrent per se. Teaching about the death penalty, learning that it's a crime that's so bad, you should be killed for it. And if you keep learning that, then you'll believe it and you'll never kill anybody. That's the real point. That's the real point of the Torah saying comes to the penalty. So we teach children from a young age to be quote unquote brainwashed that killing is unacceptable. And then they're never going to kill anybody. What's going to happen in the event that somebody, you know, goes off the derech and is going to kill somebody? Well, now we got a job to try to get them off the hook as much as possible within reason. And if there's any way we could say that perhaps he didn't remember or whatever, you know, so in other words, as serious as the crime is written in the written law, that's how seriously we try to not kill a person in the oral law. That's the way Torah works.
So two questions. One is if we go outside the law, because of extenuating circumstances, and kill the guy, then isn't murder, if it isn't halakhically...
No, because God allows the court to use their discretionary powers. That's part of their entitlement.
Where does it say that?
It says it in many places, that you listen to what the rabbis say. God says in the Torah, rabbis are allowed to do things to uphold the honor of the Torah. So even if they're, let's say this guy, you have a serial killer, he's taking advantage, he's abusing the system. He never acknowledges a warning. And he's killing one person after the other. You know, the Torah doesn't
know. They should do away with the guy, but how do they do it without being murderers themselves?
The court has discretion.
Because the Torah gives the court the discretion to do it as a court.
Yeah.
But not under the normal procedures of a regular capital crime with the judges and witnesses and this and that. There's the procedural way of getting halacha done, and then there's the non-procedural.
Will address that later on or something?
We'll see. I'm sure he will.
Yeah, if capital sure punishment...
Morris gives examples of things we do. We just lock a guy up in a cage and force feed him till he explodes.
And if capital punishment is so rare, why don't they consider jail as an alternative?
Because jail is cruel and inhumane punishment.
Protects the time.
That's cruel to do the guy. Either you punish him or not.
Well, yeah, so
give him lashes.
Yeah.
You don't, jail never helps. It's not. You can't take a man, keep him away from women for 10 years and expect him to come out normal. That's all there is to it. Can't expect a man to be in jail for 10 years like a beast to come out normal.
But sometimes it's psychiatric. I mean, that's why there's...
Psychiatric is not putting him in jail. You're putting him in a hospital.
Well, yeah, but you're...
But it, more often than not, it's not psychiatric.
So you let the guy go?
No, we beat him up. We do things. We give him lashes.
There's a God in the world who can look after him also.
Oh, there's a God too?
Yeah. But I'm saying, you know, the Bezdin has to do things. Like, listen, if a guy is behaving like an animal, you can train an animal. You beat him up. He gets enough times hit in the head, he says, I'm going to stop doing it. Can you imagine if we would now, you know, you catch a guy for attempted rape. We take one of these real whips and give him 39 lashes. he's going to think twice to rape a woman.
Maybe Singapore.
You know, the problem is, we'll put you in a nice padded cell, we'll give you an education, three square meals a day, you get medical insurance while a good working person doesn't, and he has to sell his home because he can't take care of his medical bills. The guy says, it's a great thing to be a crook. Government takes care of you. We say, we're just going to lash you till an inch within your life. It'll take you 3 months to recuperate. Try it again, buddy, and we'll see what happens. He ain't doing it so fast.
I don't think that's a description of maximum security prisons.
No, it's not.
No, you're saying it's not.
The guy's not going to do it. He's not going to, when everybody, remember.
The current system isn't so comfy either, you know.
Yeah, well, tell me about it. But that's not, that doesn't solve it. Punish the guy and let's go by there. Sell him as a Hebrew slave. Let him live somewhere where he has to behave. There's ways to deal with it.
Doesn't the guy has to go to Europe and collect somehow, is he getting worse punishment? Because
he's getting correctional. He's going to correctional institute.
But he did an accident or negligence, this guy's on purpose, and yet he didn't acknowledge it. Sounds like he's getting off.
It was negligence.
He's not getting off.
There's a God in the world. No one gets off.
The guy who kills unintentionally, we are capable of rehabilitating him by sending him to an Ir HaMiklat, and he can walk out a healthy, normal person now. When you kill a person unintentionally, you ain't no big tzaddik. You understand? You were climbing down a ladder and you didn't put a sign, men at work, and you fall and kill somebody. You were very negligent in what you did, and you really don't care about human life that much. We have to send you to the Ir HaMiklat where Levim live to learn to care about human life, and hopefully when you leave that place, you'll be a better person. And there's a potential you will be a better person because you're not a mass murderer.
And why are they praying for the Kohen Gadol to die?
Okay, that's another question. Okay, I can't get all the details here. I'm just saying, the guy isn't getting away with anything.
Get a jail free.
But it won't help. A guy who's a murderer sitting in the Ir HaMiklat will not help him any. That's the point. It won't help him any. So we have to find other means beyond what Halacha says to deal with such a guy. Okay, and there is a God reality. God does take care of these people. You know, well, these stories, you know, the Tana just pointed to the guy and he turned to a pile of bones. You think if a Tana could do that, do you think other people could have done it? You know, the Tana says, you know, you thought you lucked out? And the guy just turns into a pile of bones.
It's like the Wicked Witch.
Okay, someone would like to do murder tomorrow? You got to. We don't have that at our resources now. But the Tanaim could bring the dead to life. They could do so many things. You know, there was a little bit of fear. There was a little bit of fear of a court. Now it's just, how do you pay off the judge and get out of it and this and that, get a good lawyer? There's no fear or anything. There was a mamash of fear. Anyway, let's continue. Anyway, Ubein Shehisrabo Echmeidim. Now, who has to give the warning to the guy? Who has to give the warning? Ubein Shehisrabo Echad Mina Edim. It doesn't matter if one of the witnesses warns him. Ubein Shehisrabo Acher or somebody else in front of the witnesses. Listen to this one. Afilu Ishav, even a woman or a slave warns.
Even more.
But their witnesses hear the warning and the criminal hears it. Afilu Shama Koil Hamasre, you hear the voice of a warning. We don't even see who gave the warning. The commentaries say the Rambam, he's quoting a Gemara where the Gemara is really saying where it's a demon. Where a demon gives the warning. And demons, we don't really see them. So even that, now the Rambam doesn't like in his halachic work to talk about demons.
No, he doesn't.
He likes to keep it kind of, rational in his book. So he just says, we didn't see who gave it. But the Gemara says it clear. If even a demon warned him. In other words, it's not so much who's doing the warning. We need the guy to hear the warning.
Was he warned and the witnesses?
And the witnesses to hear the warning.
And his response.
We asked the witnesses, who warned him? I don't know. I think it was a shade. I never saw. I heard a voice.
And
the guy heard the voice and said, I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. And the witnesses saw that. That's enough.
Or.
How do you like this? Vafilu Hisraso. Even the guy himself warned himself. There's a machlokas what that means. Some say it's the victim warned him. And some say it's the criminal even said, ha ha ha, I shouldn't be doing this, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I know it comes with the death penalty, but I'm so angry I'm going to do it anyway. And the witness is just listening to all that. That's all? Harezan Erek. He will be put to death based on that warning as well.
Suicide.
That's how far it goes. Gimel. Okay. So now we come to the point now where we know what a proper hasroy is. The best and then the initial, just like the initial hearing, right? It goes to, what do you call it now?
There's a term.
What do they call it?
There's a preliminary hearing? What do you
say? Yeah, but there's an inquest, right?
That's afterwards.
Inquest is afterwards?
But it's not a trial.
Oh, okay. That's, so it's preliminary hearing. When they bring the guy in for the first, to decide if there's anything to talk about.
Yeah. It's
a grand jury or something.
No. There is a term.
Yeah, I know. It's in the U.S.
Not inquest. It's whatever it is. Whatever it is.
My wife.
But it's the first step. First step is, listen, did you see him? Do you know it's him? Did you warn him? Was it a real warning? Did he acknowledge the warning? Because if we don't have that, there's not, we can't even start the game. Okay. Now let's say we've gone past the preliminary and now we got what to talk about. So now the next step is, we gotta deal with the witnesses who are now prepared to testify. We're at that stage. Halacha Gimel. So let's say the witnesses at the end of the day say, he had a proper warning, and we recognize him, so now we're ready for step two. Okay, so now we're about to hear their testimony now. Now it's time to hear testimony. But you think we're just going to hear their testimony right away? Now look how big Halacha Gimel is. See how big it is? Most of this is just the warning that the Beis Din gives these guys. Before you open up your mouths, before you're about to testify, we want to let you know what you're getting into, because you might want to back out of this, and let's not waste any time at all. They say the following, Amalem, Shemru Tomro, you might be thinking to say, skip. The Kate said, Ma'aymim al Piskei Nefashis. What do we do to scare and warn witnesses when they're doing capital cases? Amalem, we say to the witnesses, maybe Shemer Tomer may omit. Maybe your whole testimony is only by estimation. You know, circumstantial evidence is what you think it is. Umi Shmua, or you heard other people saying it. Eid Mipi Eid, one witness from another witness. Maybe Mipi Adam Nemesh, or maybe you heard a trustworthy person tell it to you, and that's where you're coming, but you never really saw it. Did you actually see it? Don't you know? You know, this is not going to be just going to give a statement and we're going to let it go. We're going to take you through 7 times 7 different layers of intense questionings to try to show that you're liars. It's not going to just be whatever you say, fine, thank you very much, that's your testimony. We're going to ask, where were you, what time, what day, what this, what that. We're going to compare your testimony with the other guy's testimony. We're going to rake you through the coals, guys.
So, are pretty good to get through all this and then testify.
So that's the first thing they're saying. Heavy yarm, you should know, guys. Capital cases are not like monetary cases. There's much more scrutiny. Monetary cases, adam no same money scapula. What could happen? Let's say a monetary case, the Beis Din blows it. So, okay, even we blow it, when we find out we made a mistake, just give the money back and atonement happens. So it's not such cataclysmic results if we mess up the case. But dina nefashis, but if you will testify and you're lying, or just guesstimating, and you're gonna kill this guy not lawfully, you should know, damo v'dam zaro tluyim bo atzof kolom. His blood and the potential blood of his ancestors, that would happen. Descendants all depend on you until the end of time. In other words, this guy could have had children, who would have had children, who had children. This guy now, you go down 200 years down the line, could have 10,000 kids. And we will say that you have killed 10,000 people.
Whoa.
How do we know this outlandish statement? Shrei B'Kainan, what does it say about Cain when he killed Hevel? What does Torah say? Kol d'mei achicha tzakim. The voice of the blood of your brother is screaming. Damo, his blood, v'dam zero, and the blood of his descendants is screaming.
Oh, that was a lot of descendants.
That's what it meant. Can you imagine? More than 7 billion people.
Yes. Wow.
That's a lot. Lefika, and now they continue. Listen, mamash, a whole drusha they're giving. It's like a whole drusha now. Lefika, therefore, nivradim yechidi, and therefore, the human being, the first human being, was created as one. That's why God only created one human being. Allow me to teach us. Shikolav abi never shakas melam. Anybody who kills one soul in this world, It's like he destroyed the whole world. You saved one soul in the world. It's like you saved the entire world. Because every creature, every human being is in the same stature of the first human being. To show you that just like the first human being was the source of the entire world, any human being should be considered like a source of an entire world. And as well, but not every face is exactly the same as the others. And therefore, it's not clones of each other. Therefore, each and every individual, because he's a different, uniquely faced and characterized person, every human being is entitled to say, Bishvili Nivram, the whole world was created for me. In other words, I'm compared to an entire world, and therefore I shouldn't be lost from my Averos. And you certainly also shows Hashem's greatness. He makes so many different faces and they all look different. So you got to be careful what you're getting involved with over here. It's not just, so we kill the guy. Think it literally, so careful. It's a potential destruction of the entire world. This is what's riding on your testimony, guys. Are you prepared to go through that? Let's not waste our time. If you're making up this story, we're going to either catch you or you realize, even if we don't catch you, you realize what destruction you are doing. You'll never live this down, quote unquote. This is what they're scaring them about. And say, keep going. Shema Torah. Maybe you're going to say, after we scared you so much, maybe you scared them too much. Malonot says, what do we need this headache for? Why? You know, it's getting scary now. What do we need this whole Pachkolini over here for? Well, too bad. You can't, if you did see it, you can't back out of it. Because the Torah says, V'hu eid or ro yoda, if this person is a witness or saw and he knew, and if he doesn't do that, the pasuk ends, he carries the sin. Boy. If you don't testify what you do know, even though it's scary to testify, you carry the sin. It's as if you did the sin, because we're not taking him to court. Or seven of you say the opposite, why should we kill a guy? You know, why should it be on our heads that we killed a guy? Too bad. V'alok farnemar, it says, u'bavod v'shoim rino. When the wicked are destroyed, there's great joy in God's world. So you're doing a mitzvah. If the guy is really guilty, you're doing a mitzvah to get the guy killed. Okay. So now, im omdu v'divreim, if they're still prepared to testify after that scary treatment, they take the bigger one of the two witnesses, the greater one, however, one of the, ubot, privately, ubot, you know, so now we inspect him and investigate him, bedrisha v'chakira, kemoshis barbil chazedus. When we'll learn later on the laws of Edus, they'll go into great detail exactly what the questioning of the witnesses is. Suffice it to say, there's about 14 questions are asked. And they want to know every single detail. What color was his shirt? What time of day was it? Where was the sun? Where was the moon? Like every kind of question that could be asked. Okay? Now they're going to ask the first guy, and then they ask the next guy privately. So you can't be in collusion. We find that the testimonies are all corroborating with each other. They're all saying the same thing, basically. The first guy, rather. If we find the first guy, Sesame is legit.
But did you miss a line? Afilo hayumea edim bodkin?
I didn't get there yet.
Okay.
Right? So let's say they ask a million questions, and everything he says stacks up. It's trying to make himself contradict within his own testimony. You know, what time was it? 4 o'clock afternoon, and then 10 minutes later. So where exactly was the moon positioned at that time? Oh, it was in the left. What? You said it was 4 years? You know, they're trying to get the guy to trip up. But if he gets through the whole thing, flying colors, everything sounds reasonable, then what do we do next? We take the second witness. We question him the very same way. Even 100 witnesses came. We give him the same questioning. And they all got to be good witnesses, because even if one is no good, we throw them all out. If now all the witnesses, their testimony was good, then we start the court case. Now, only now, we have the evidence we want. Now we take it to, it's very interesting, you don't listen to the defendant. He has nothing to say in this case. Because why? Because the defendant can't be an aide. Right. If you're a defendant, you're a nogeya bedaver. You have a bias. We can't accept this testimony. Two guys come. What about the defendant? The defendant has nothing to say. So now we're ready to start the deliberations, and now is a good place for us to stop.
In Canadian courts, you don't have to test.
Well, there's the murderer!